is Michael Welch for CKUW, and I'm joined on the line by Marielena Ripoll. She's a Saskatoon-based writer and organizer. She was active in the David Orchard campaign, including his runs for the leadership of the Progressive Conservative Party in 1997 and 2003. So, thank you for joining us, Marielena.
Glad to be here.
Okay, now you've recently been circulating a commentary about the the voter suppression, why people aren't voting, and the general analysis that we hear in the media is that this is just due to voter apathy. Fewer and fewer people are turning out to the polls because, you know, they're turned off by the leaders or politics or what have you. And you have a very different interpretation of this phenomenon. Do you want to explain what the core points you have there?
Yes, I certainly do. And I've had this approach for a while now because we've heard so much about apathy. Apathy, and almost hysteria about apathy, and no analysis, examination of what has happened to produce the lower voter participation rates that we now have. And, you know, we did have first in 97, we had our very last election where everybody in Canada was enumerated, everybody who could vote. It was a very thorough process that took place then. And our first election without enumeration was 2000. And I was a campaign manager of that in that year. I was a campaign manager last in 2008 as well. So I had a real opportunity to see what has happened to our voter registration at the time and how difficult it became for people to get registered, get themselves on a so-called permanent list, and how messy these lists were when they were made into so-called permanent lists in comparison to the wonderful enumeration list that we had, which were really a world-class registration system where the state took responsibility to get every citizen registered.
What was the rationale behind those changes?
Well, the rationale at the time was, I think the cost was a big one, and the Reform Party was very much in favor of getting rid of enumeration, again, getting the government out of the lives of people. That was their ideological motivation. The Liberal Party, I think, was, you know, cutting this and cutting that at the time. So this became a casualty, probably not as ideologically driven, but still with the same consequences. So you had a bad combination of, deficit cutting and then ideology from the Reform Party at the time, and just get the government out and let people take care of themselves. And so then, so what we have then, take care of yourself, it is not easy for people to get registered. And that became clear quite soon that the voter participation drops by the very fact that people can't get to the voters list. And therefore, if you're not on the voters list, you have really no chance to get the vote, or very little chance. You can go through some hoops, the last minute if you happen to be in the right place and you have to meet the right person at the voting booth. But a lot of people that we worked with in 2000, and they were Aboriginal people because I was in Prince Albert, they absolutely could not get on the list. They were, they had moved. They were transient in a sense, and they didn't have their ID. They didn't know where to go. They didn't have computers. They didn't have their own personal, phones, landlines. And so you could see immediately a population that got affected really, really profoundly. And we ended up in our campaign. In the campaign, you're supposed to be going out and knocking on doors and telling people that, here you have a good candidate. We ended up helping people get on the voters list. And it was very hairy and very difficult. And so that's where you had that first decimating the participation rates on that way. And that has, of course, continued because we have had no enumeration. We have lists. And as from a point of view of the campaigns, the list that we got, as I said, were very messy. They were very, names were old. People had died. So we had very little to work with. So the campaigns themselves became handicapped that way. Had to spend a huge amount of time trying to figure out who was on the list and who wasn't. Eh? Mm. So that was in 2000. And at that time, they hadn't really introduced these very stringent ID requirements. They came in 2008. And these are the ones that really take the cake, because now you don't, people can't get on the list. It's difficult to get on the list. But if they get on the list and have a chance to, you know, they're going to go and vote, they discover that they don't have the right documentation. And the documentation that it becomes so crucial is that you have to have an address, documentation that shows that you have an address. It has to be a legal document of some kind. And if you take that in with you and it has a box number on it, which is what happens in the rural areas, happens in the, you know, Aboriginal reserves,
yeah.
Most everybody has a box number.
Yes, you don't have a street address in the rural area. Mm-hmm. You don't have a street address.
People don't have street addresses.
Yeah.
And so it became an incredible situation of people going there with their ID, with their address, and being told, no, your box number is not good enough. You have to have something else. So you have a, you know, kind of massive drop of people for that reason alone. And you could gather from the Elections Canada's own surveys afterwards that about 5% of the eligible, or the people who were registered, could not vote because of they didn't have the documentation. They said that they were, you know, couldn't, and that would have amounted to, the 5% would have been 500,000 people. So, and I imagine this is going to be more this time.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that kind of a, you know, difficulties in becoming a registered voter, and then difficulties in voting, and that is particularly hitting the, you know, the less privileged areas of the country geographically, and also the people in society, young people, poor people, working class people, Aboriginal people, new citizens, and so on. So you have and seniors. I should not forget that seniors are now under great danger of not being able to vote, because particularly the ones who are living in seniors' residences.
Now, that's actually quite surprising, because with the permanent registry, they you'd think that people who are seniors who've been in a certain address for a long period of time, who aren't very mobile, that they would have less trouble.
Well, in seniors' residences, of course, people are quite old, and they, you know, might die before the next election, but they don't have a system in these places where, you know, people would have documentation that they live there. So people have their own personal ID, but nothing that would address on it. And that's what happened here in Saskatoon, for instance. It happened elsewhere, too, that people went to vote like they've always done. And because nobody had that kind of documentation, they were sent packing. And that it's a real shock to the system if you have been a voter all your life, and you're very conscientious about it, and then you go and perform your duty and your privilege, and you're told, nope, it's game over for you. And, the way the younger voter who is rejected is affected, of course, it turns them off. And turns them off in a very practical way, because people told us, no point going there, because so-and-so couldn't vote, and I couldn't vote in the last... Actually, these rules were introduced in a by-election in 88, in March. And the people who were turned away then, we had to twist their arm to go back to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And spend a whole lot of time trying to figure out how they could get to vote, you know, and they couldn't. You know, there were rejections right and left. And so you have almost kind of mass casualties of disenfranchisement that nobody is paying attention to. And I say nobody, I'm talking about the political elites, you know, the parliament, I consider that part of that. The media has stayed away from this issue completely, and they're concentrating on apathy. And apathy then becomes the, you know, if you read anything about the elections or watch, it's all apathy talk, and particularly young people apathetic, and now they're not apathetic, and they're doing this and they're doing that, to vote, supposedly. But in fact, the same young people, the same age group, will have difficulties in getting to vote, you know, because they might not have the very documentation that's needed. So there's a lot of kind of a mystification about the process. And my piece that is, you know, I've written about the real reasons why people are, when the rates are dropping, is trying to open that up for a full discussion and mm-hmm. to make people aware that things are not the way they should be.
Mary Elena, are there any other changes that we've seen over the last several years that you believe undermines democratic expression?
Well, I believe also the time element, the shortage of the election period. We now have 37 days in this particular election, and about 4 or 5 days are taken with Easter holiday, and you know, really cutting into, it's almost an impossible thing to be able to run a campaign, you know, from the campaign's point of view, you know, or for the citizens' point of view, to get anything done in less than 30 days. And we used to have a minimum of 47 days. And that would at least allow the campaigns to get going. Because, you know, if you're a candidate starting, the incumbents are, you know, they're okay because they can just, you know, continue their campaigns from their offices or kind of get their, they have an infrastructure. But if you're a candidate starting, you know, you have to get offices, you have to get your infrastructure going. And that will take maybe, in our case, it takes, you know, maybe a couple of weeks before we can get going. So that short time, which is partly also the cost cutting, let's make it cheap, let's make it really quick, is cutting into the really the deep into the bone of the citizen participation. Because if the elections are gone by the time you realize that they are taking place, this is, you know, how can you participate? And we found that out in 2000, and, you know, when we started to call people about the election, they didn't know about it. Whereas with the enumeration was like it heralded election coming. They would, you know, people would go from door to door to find out who lived, who could vote, if they were citizens, if they were, you know, the right age, and so on. And that way people were, you know, nationally, nationwide alerted to the elections. But when you start just to call people out, you know, after the election is called, we found so many people who didn't even know the election was coming or when it was going to take place. So you have this kind of a obstacle too, eh? But the time is very, very important. So I think the 47 days minimum is what is needed, that so that people can really engage and find out and define the issues more clearly, and actually define the issues at all, because right now the media does all the defining. And this is the very alienating process of just watching the elections on television mostly, or, you know, and not having any kind of a campaign, you know, all candidates meetings in your riding, or no real, you don't have a chance to even see your candidate anywhere, because they can't really visit everybody either, I mean, under these circumstances. And so everything is kind of being thinned out, you know, to the detriment of citizen participation and the voters' rights.
Mary Elena, one last quick question. You talked about the media kind of driving the agenda. I mean, what the media is telling us lately is that the NDP is surging in popularity, and that there's the prospect of possibly a conservative majority government as NDP takes votes from the Liberals. I guess it's kind of a loaded question, but I mean, I'm wondering to what extent this the NDP surge phenomenon might have been. I mean, I'm not, you know, to take anything away from NDP supporters or anything like that, but to what extent this phenomenon is really going, at the end of the day, we're going to end up with a parliament that's truly reflective of the will of the people.
Well, I don't think we are going to. I don't think first of all, I feel very manipulated by the polls. I think we are all manipulated into its, you know, kind of hysterical ways about, you know, not just voter apathy, but who is going to win and who is not going to win and this and that. It's all happening in the, you know, like the polling is almost indecent, because there's no breathing space to even reflect or kind of you have our own thoughts about anything. So I think there's a manipulation there, and I think maybe this is, you know, the media very easily falls into these traps and ends up, you know, I think this is helping Harper, this kind of a constant polling and breathlessness about the NDP is going to do, you know, they're going to be the opposition or they're going to be the government. I mean, this is totally nonsensical stuff, eh? And so that is a real problem of you know, being able to make sense of things. And I hope that people just kind of reject this, you know, this information that's coming at them. It's hard because it's so incessant, eh? And yeah. What was your other question there?
Well, I was just mentioning, like, the final election result, if you anticipate it will be truly reflective of the will
of
the people.
Well, no, and back to that question, of course, our electoral system is so, is probably, you know, it's not just the voting system that I've been talking about, but also the first past the post has to change. That has to be, that's absolutely a basic ingredient of democracy. We have to change that here, but it can't be changed without the voting system also going back to the registration. Even if you have a proportional representation, you still have to have voter registration. Mm-hmm. So that has to be changed. You can't just dream away about the proportional representation and leave this other thing, alone, because it is, if people cannot get on the voters list, and if they cannot vote, it doesn't help them if there's proportional representation or not.
Thanks a lot, Mary Elena.
You're welcome.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye-bye.